February 12, 1981, California State University at Long Beach. Irving Ahlquist, interviewed by Kay Briegel.
Okay, we'll start with who supervised the practice teaching.
All right. From the day that the college opened in 1949, it was really considered to be more of a teacher education institution than perhaps anything else, though it was not called a normal school or a state teacher's college. The supervision of any person going into any of the disciplines, whether it was English or history or the social sciences, was under the Department of Education. So therefore, it would be men like Kephas Kinsman. Dr. Kephas Kinsman, now retired, had taught at the high school level, and that had been one of his subjects was social science. So Dr. Kephas Kinsman actually supervised those. Now, the first time we had a student teacher, I would not be aware of because I was not involved in the teacher education program per se. That came years later. But it was done by education, and I think, to my knowledge, the Long Beach school system was used, perhaps not exclusively, but almost exclusively, because we tried to build bridges with the Long Beach School District. And the president of the college had various individuals in the district office come to campus to meet with people in education. So there was a close liaison in that sense.
When did people in the history department start supervising student teaching?
All right. It was during the Peterson administration, which would be from 1949 to 1958, is it? Roughly that, anyway. That Dr. Peterson was of the opinion that if this was to be an institution that had any kind of committed interest in teacher education, it should not be the sole responsibility of education. After all, he was a chemist. He was involved in also at San Jose in some phase of teacher education, especially in natural science education. All right, he then proposed that individuals in the particular disciplines get involved. So one of the first persons hired was a man by the name of Dr. Jack Searles, S-E-A-R-L-E-S. Jack was brought in as a person with a PA, with a doctorate, I think it was an EDD, in social science education. But he was not housed with education. He was housed actually with the social science people in FO2. In fact, had an office diagonally across from mine on the second floor. So he was responsible entirely for the assignment of individuals in each of the social sciences with no involvement by anybody in the actual discipline. Then as the workload became greater and Jack Searles' time load or workload became heavier, Peterson came across with the idea that people in the social sciences who held or had held a secondary school credential should get involved in supervision. Notice the stipulation was that you should have taught at the high school level or junior high school level, and that you should have held a credential or continued to hold such a credential. Dr. Donald Peters in our department had taught in a junior high. Dr. Kimball had taught in both junior high and high school, and of course were the likely persons to be tapped. Kimball had no interest whatsoever. Peters reluctantly said, okay, we'll do it. I remember he supervised a few student teachers over at Wilson High School, but didn't really like it. That would take us in, I suppose, the late 50s. Meanwhile, because of that lack of commitment, and even anybody in any of the other disciplines in teacher education, Dr. Popham was brought in. Again, I don't remember the exact year of his coming, but we could check it in the catalog. He had a Doctor of Education in social science education as well and became the second man in that area, which does reflect that there was an increasing enrollment of people in social sciences. And by the way, at that time, we did have a social science major. A person could earn a baccalaureate degree in social science with upper division work, 12 units in one field, 9 units in the second field, and 6 units in the third field. The fields basically determined by what was most commonly taught, and so history and government would probably be among the most significant, along with geography. So he came in. Then, after he had been here but a couple of years, there came to be a sort of a rebellion among the people in the social science, because Jack Searles, with whom we were greatly contented, decided to leave to take a position at Penn State University, a comparable position. With his departure, it came to be under the jurisdiction of the man that I mentioned. And we ran into great difficulty in this sense, that many of our students were not treated courteously. Many felt that they weren't getting what they wanted out of the program. And so there was an attempt to say, well, why don't we, and no other discipline in social science actually show the interest other than history, that we should get involved and do something about it. Now, I got interested, though I've never taught, and this is, of course, then on the record, but I've never taught in a high school, though I did go to a private liberal arts college and did my student teaching in its own private academy, which certainly was not a good cross-section of what public education is about, because it was private, and most of my students were the children of the college people and professional people. But nevertheless, I did have, or could have had, I didn't apply for it, but I could have had an Illinois teaching credential. But I never did teach. I simply went on and got a master's and a doctorate, so there was no time to stop to teach in high school. But I was getting greatly concerned about the status of history, how it was taught in the high schools, yeah, even alone on the college-university campus. Also the fact that so many people to whom I spoke said, oh, history. Oh, that was one of the worst subjects I ever had. And some of the poorest teachers I had were in history. Well, that was constantly in the back of my mind for several years, saying, what can I do? I could do it partially through my subject matter field, working with potential teachers. But could I do it some other way? Then, when a sort of rebellion took place against what was going on campus, and particularly with this second person, there was a thought that probably somebody should be brought in who was acquainted with the public schools of the Long Beach area, because that was the district with which we were most closely associated. And so Dr. Applegate, who retired from Long Beach City College at about the age of 62 or 63, was asked if he could come. And the reason he was asked is, well, one, he was at Long Beach City College, but he knew the public school system of Long Beach, having been there for many, many years. So he was brought to coordinate the social science teacher education program. Then, because he was coordinating it, he couldn't do all the supervision as well. So he requested that individuals that would be interested take part of their load in supervision. And the workload was a good one at that time. You got one unit for each student whom you supervised. So I thought, well, if I'm going to do anything about it, this is when I should get started. So this was probably between 1963 and 1965, perhaps, right around that time, that I got involved, and only took 3 units out of my 12-unit load to do supervision. At the same time, however, we were able to recruit people from other disciplines in the social sciences, such as Dr. Kenneth Millsap, who was in the Department of Political Science, who resigned and went to the University of Denver later. Who else was interested? Oh, Gene Wheeler, Dr. Gene Wheeler in geography. Dr. Jim Wilson in geography. In history, eventually others were added, like Keith Collins and Bill Weber, but that came farther down the road. I was among the early ones that's under Dr. Applegate. Ben Applegate, after having been here for a few years, there was the case, once again, of the selection of a department chair. Not selection, but election, I should say. And a group within the department were of the opinion he should be the department chairman. This was disturbing to some people in the department, because the feeling was, He was brought here for one thing, and now he's being brought in to do another thing, or being transferred into another position. However, an election was held, and there was a great deal of behind-the-scenes maneuvering, and he was elected department chair. Then he immediately had the responsibility of saying, well, who's going to take over the position I've had? And because I had done the supervision, he asked me if I would assume that job. And I said, well, let me think about it. Let me see what the paperwork is that's involved and so forth. And after a week or two, I said, yes, I'd be willing to try it. Well, that would be probably around 65, 66, 67. I wish I really knew. I probably could find out if I went back to documents. With the idea that, you know, you would have it, but it wouldn't necessarily be a position that you would hold over any long period of time. With the change in chair of the department, perhaps others would do it. Well, no one else seemed to want to be involved in the administrative part, but a number were interested in saying, yes, I will take on supervision. So that's when Bill Sveck got involved, and Bill Weber got involved, and Keith Collins eventually got involved, and a number of people, plus people I had outside of history. But I suppose we can say that for the whole program called social science, history has been more involved in it than any other group. And I think made evident by the establishment of our Society for History Education and the publication, of course, of The History Teacher and also the Network News Exchange, which is a letter for teachers at all levels from junior high and through the university level. So in that sense, that kind of gives you a feeling of what happened, though perhaps rather skeletal, in which I've sketched it for you. But I've stayed with it because I eventually got involved in the history education project with which Gene Asher was involved, with a federal grant by which he left the campus about 72, 73. And then the office for that project was held at the University of Indiana at Bloomington. And then Gene Asher, being asked to continue with that project, said, I will continue only if I can take the project with me to Cal State Long Beach. So he brought the project here to Long Beach. That's how our curriculum library there in FO2 got started. Many things were given to us by the federal government in the sense of a budget for the purchase of films and film strips and books and that type of thing. So until those funds ran out, I guess it was roughly, well, around 75 or 76, right around in there, that the funds were starting to dwindle, and we didn't have them. And Gene Asher was then occupying both positions of chair of the Department of History and the director of the HEP, the History Education Project. And that's when I think we became very active. We sponsored a number of conferences on campus. We made it a point to be present at the National Council of Social Studies meetings, which are always held over Thanksgiving. We had several conferences on campus, and incidentally, down the road next December, we already have a program submitted for the meeting of the American Historical Association, which will be in Los Angeles, on what has happened to the teaching of, quote, the new history. And are bringing in some very fine people from across the country who were in it in the early 70s and who have seen changes and trends in history education in the last 5 to 8 years. So we continue with this, I feel, and of course down the road now in 4 or 5 years I'll be retiring, and then the question is, you know, who is going to replace me? I think there are people that are interested, but it's a job, I might say this, that when you're involved in this and with public schools, it involves a great deal of diplomacy because we are there only as their guests and we cannot dictate to them. We cooperate. We do not try to evaluate their teachers that are the master teachers unless it comes to the point where we've had a student teacher who we've discovered has had a very poor experience. We probably, rather than going to the school and say anything, just don't use that school. And that way we're not giving feedback about this teacher. If they think the teacher's fine, that's their prerogative. But it's also ours to say, well, we don't want to use the school again. So I think we're as involved now as perhaps ever, but have changed our program considerably, which of course I could speak of with perhaps asking another question, the pilot program.
Well,
okay. All right. Teacher supervision is a very, very expensive program. We finally got it down so that no longer would you get one unit per student teacher. It's now down, which isn't too bad, to 0.96 unit of for your faculty load, teaching load. That's still expensive. And the college or university supervisor must make at least a minimum of 6 visits. And we did have some problems, which I had to correct with some of my supervisors. And incidentally, I had to go off the campus finally to hire people. I hired like Dr. Lois Weinman, who has taught in our department and who has taught herself at a junior high. She was an excellent person. I hired people out of junior colleges who had had experience teaching in high schools. They were what we call part-time instructors, but in charge of supervision. I ran into some difficulty, not with these, but some of our own faculty members who weren't out as they promised they would be. And if they did go out, they would probably stay in the classroom 10 minutes, make a departure, not visit the other classes, and then not give the student teacher any kind of input as to how that teacher was doing, and seldom meeting with the cooperating teacher to get that kind of input. So as we looked at it, if a person had as his load or her load 3 units, all right, that's 1/4 of that individual's salary. And if that person were making, we'll say, $20,000, that's $5,000 to supervise 3 student teachers, which is a very, very expensive project. Furthermore, we were getting input from the administration that the number of people entering the teacher education program as of the last few years has been going down. Where 10 years ago I would have 60 people in student teaching, we're now down to 15 to 20 people. One semester as low as 10. The message was getting around, there weren't that many jobs in social science, and so people were going in new directions. Home economics started with what was called a pilot program. That is, they would work closely with good teachers, that is, they knew something about them in the public schools, and who would assume the full responsibility of supervising those student teachers very, very carefully, but keeping in contact with the university and a particular person in charge of that program, with the person on the university staff also going out when necessary, but not making regular visits. For each student teacher under that program, the university supervisor got 0.3 units. So you would have to have 10 student teachers to get 3 units, whereas previously, 3 student teachers. The question was, could it be done as effectively or not? So 2 years ago, I decided I would experiment partially with that program. Not put every student teacher in it, but probably, I think I put 75% of them into the program. I went out to the public schools, conferred with people in social science, and indicate what we were going to do, that we would pay each master or cooperating teacher $100 per assignment. So there are 3 assignments under the Ryan Act that a student teacher has. So if the master cooperating teacher had the person for 2, we don't want that person to have any individual for 3, but for 2, $200 would be the payment. But to be paid, those teachers would have to come to campus for seminars. Under state law, you cannot pay a teacher or an employee twice for doing the same thing. But by requiring them to come to campus for 2-hour seminars, we could pay them the $100. So I started it with, as I say, about 75% of the people to the point where I've gone 100%. So for the last year and a half, every person doing student teaching in the social sciences is under what we still call pilot program, but for which we're going to have to get a better name because we certainly are going to be out of the pilot program pretty soon. Probably it's one of an alternative program for supervision. So I bring the people this past semester as an example. I brought in 42 cooperating teachers that were working with 19 student teachers. The seminars related to different topics, this past semester, the fall of 1980, dealt with the first time on cross-cultural education. What is the university doing in this area? What are we doing to train teachers to be ready to go out into that kind of a situation? Not that they necessarily had to be bilingual. So I brought in Frank Hidalgo, plus some students who are in the program, to carry on a dialogue as to what this program is, and then in turn, to let the individuals, the teachers, the cooperating teachers, ask questions. Because after all, many of these people have been out in the field for a number of years, they're not acquainted with what's going on. Then the second seminar, I actually have only two, and they're 2 hours each. I think Home Ec has three or four. But I find social science teachers are different than home economics teachers. I don't know what it is, but social science teachers tend to be more rebellious and say, you know, I'm not coming for more than two. And I feel we accomplish as much in two as we would in several, and as long as they're 2 hours long. The second one dealt with teaching economics through the use of American history. And Dr. Lee Scove in our Department of Economics has had a federal grant, along with an Exxon grant, on how we can improve the teaching of economics. Not each teacher, but we gave a kit, a $45 kit that Exxon provided with beautiful materials, teaching materials of all kinds, one for every two teachers. Now, if there was only one teacher from a given school, then that teacher got the kit. But if there were four teachers, they would get two kits, that type of thing. Plus, we also brought in a teacher from Linwood High School who has used this material and who in turn could talk about how he implemented it in his classroom. That turned out to be perhaps one of the most successful seminars, and the feedback has been excellent on what they want to do. For the ensuing semester, spring 81, our first one is going to be, how do we, as experienced teachers, evaluate student teachers? Because I am getting the feedback now from these teachers. There's no university supervisor coming out. I need someone to talk to. What are the things you people are really looking for? So I'm going to have a Mr. Bo Burke from Fountain Valley High School, who's in charge of all student teachers in all disciplines at that school, and who has had a great experience with writing evaluations. And then Tom Shaw in our Educational Placement Office, the two of them talk about evaluations, because many student teachers will say, well, you know, I got to have all superiors or I'll never get a job. Is that realistic or is it not? So we want to do something with that, and then probably have samples of various kinds of evaluations with names not there, blanked out, and then discuss what we do. I'm not sure, it's not the most exciting thing for me to do, but because it's been expressed as a need, I'll do it. The second seminar is going to be on modernization in the world today, and particularly the third world, and Ed Goslin in our department, who's experimenting with that, along with some others, and offering a course, is going to take that over. I talked to him about it. He seemed very excited to do it. We've done other things. I did one on Africa and had five different people, all from our campus, who had been granted like scholarships or fellowships at UCLA in African studies, which included music, choreography, comparative literature, anthropology, and history. That was a very, very successful seminar as well. So that gives you an idea of what we're doing. All right, these teachers come to our campus. They meet in the Faculty Development Center. We also leave time for them to ask questions, saying, okay, are you having difficulties? Do you wish, and as I say, to speak to me personally? Do you wish to have me come out to your school if you're having a problem? What's fascinating this past semester is that I have not had one call from one teacher nor any conference at our seminars with any teacher that anyone was having a problem. That was not true the first semester 2 years ago when I offered this. I had to remove several student teachers. There were complaints, inability to plan, lesson plans were poor, lack of real knowledge in subject matter fields, but again, as I reminded the teacher, social science is a very big field, and each one has to have a depth major in one of the seven fields, and if you've got a depth major in psych and you're teaching U.S. history, you know, you're hearing that they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. And these teachers that are U.S. history specialists expect these individuals to perhaps have a better knowledge than they do, when they don't, because they're not required to take that much U.S. history. So we had some problems that first year. Since we have not, and I've been given very good input, that, like, one young man is teaching world history right now, he won't finish for a couple of weeks, but one of the master teachers told me, I went out to the school because I just wanted to see what things were like, because he was a psych major, and he said, this fella spends, and I know it, because he's in our library, and he's at the university library, he spends 5 hours a day preparing to teach two sections of world history. Then he has a third class, which is an actually social problems, which he can tie in pretty well with the psych and soc. But there are those loopholes, and, you know, it disturbs us. It's not like preparing a person to teach math. Those people have gone so far in mathematics, they're way beyond their students. And they can teach any math course in a high school. But social science is a broad, broad field. And fortunately, we've had sympathetic teachers because they've been through it. They've been asked, perhaps, suddenly, you got to teach an introduction to geography class. And so they got involved in that. I want to tell you also of another program that we're involved in, that's in the field of international education with student teachers from England. And I think I've spoken to you about it, Kay, but this semester just passed. We had two from Wales. But that is a very heavy burden because the college from which they come, which is Gwent in Wales, requires that a university person be there one day a week for all the time they're teaching and for all their free time. So I spent 4 hours every Thursday this past semester with the two people. Fortunately, they were at the same school. They taught the same classes, so it was easy for the three of us to sit down and discuss it. But we have decided that anytime in the future this happens, something's going to have to be done because it increases your load tremendously. And driving there, coming back, the 4 hours on the campus, well, almost five, because I was there by 7:15 and left at 12. And then, you know, getting there and returning, so I wasn't back on campus until after lunch, until, you know, 1:30. But very delightful people. And I suppose I should say for the record that, much to our shame, I felt that these students were perhaps better trained, but one qualification needs to be added. They are trained in depth. These two people were in geography, and they've had geography, so it spills out. I doubt they could teach any of the other social sciences very well, but they were well trained in geography. And of course, it made some of our other students show up rather poorly, in the sense that teachers at a particular high school where these Welsh students were teaching said, you know, we wish we could keep them. We're learning from them. So it makes for a unjustifiable comparison. When you consider, like, if it was a history major teaching strictly history, that person will show up better than if he's teaching history and then having to teach a course in introduction to the social science or freshman geography or whatever combination there might be. Okay?
Yeah. How did you spread out from Long Beach? Because somehow you got to Fountain Valley.
All right. What happened in time, as we increasingly, in those early years, had so many student teachers, Long Beach was unwilling to have that many student teachers in its schools, and rightfully so. Because you can flood a few schools with student teachers, and you're immediately getting complaints from parents who say, well, you know, my student is had now for four semesters student teachers. And their feeling is student teachers aren't well qualified. Whereas if they knew, there are sometimes student teachers who are better than the regular teachers, some of whom tragically are burned out. So we had to start to look outside the boundaries, plus the fact that we were serving southeastern Los Angeles County and Orange County is the stipulation for the original, if I may call it, chartering of this institution. And with many students coming from that area, we decided that was a growing area. It was an area where perhaps our students could get jobs, whereas Long Beach was at a sort of a plateau, and people were staying and not leaving their teaching positions, that we needed a system whereby we also could give students the opportunity to be recruited in other districts. So we have gone, you know, into Orange County, and we've gone, you know, even into the inner city of Los Angeles, and we've gone north to Montebello, El Monte, Paramount, all these different areas, Whittier, Fullerton, Anaheim. We've gone as far south as Newport Beach, Costa Mesa. I have a call for next fall for somebody to do student teaching at Fallbrook. I'm not sure how that can work out, unless I could get somebody in the pilot program. But it became necessary in the light of the large numbers, and you couldn't flood a district, because Long Beach was also in time having to get and handle student teachers from USC, from UCLA. Cal State Dominguez Hills came along, wanted to use it. So you had various institutions. As we moved into Orange County, we had to be careful, too, that we weren't competing with UC Irvine, with Cal State Fullerton, with Chapman College, Laverne College, a number of these institutions. So I would say we moved out of the immediate Long Beach area strictly out of necessity, and that the students wouldn't be subjected the 3 years or so they were in high school to student teachers and so many different other different courses that they were in.
How do you avoid conflicts with other colleges that want to place students?
All right, what we do, for example, I know certain schools that have been pretty much taken over by a given college. For example, Artesia High School, the ABC district, has been pretty much utilized by Cal State Dominguez Hills and Cal State LA. One reason being that it does have a nice distribution of minority population. So I have not sent anybody there until now this spring 81. I'm sending one student teacher there, and they said they were very happy to have this one person. I also work with a principal, vice principal, assistant principal in a school as to whether I can send. Would you have room for anybody in social science? And or if there's a coordinator such as John Boberg in Fountain Valley, and he'll say, yes, I can handle three people in social science, but I couldn't handle anybody in English or that type of thing. So a lot of the coordination has to be done by telephone and finding out whether it's open. So like, for example, this past fall in October, as I was accepting applications for the spring of 81, I would work with a student. And I give students quite a bit of choice as to where they want to go. We prefer that they not go back to the high school from which they graduated for several reasons. One, they may be with teachers who had them as juniors or seniors and who still see them as juniors or seniors and probably don't fully trust them professionally. Secondly, some have brothers, sisters, and so forth in the school, and it can be embarrassing. So unless there are good reasons why, we don't assign them to the school from which they graduated. We like, however, insofar as possible, to accommodate them so that transportation-wise, they're not having to drive great distances. And do it because, you know, our student population comes from a rather large radius. If they're students from the inner city of Los Angeles, we will place them in such schools if, in my discipline, social sciences, if I may so call it a discipline, but the area in which I coordinate, if there are teachers that are willing to participate in our program, this pilot program. And to illustrate this, last semester I had two in the inner city, one a black male and one a white Japanese girl, both of whom are being hired for the spring 81 semester. They were so pleased with their performance. So what we have to look at it that way. We also have to recognize that by mandate under the Riot Act, the student teacher must have a cross-cultural experience. Now that can be either in what we call Education Single Subject 300, the preliminary directed field experience, which they must take first before they take anything else. If they have a cross-cultural experience there, then I'm willing to put them in a school that probably doesn't have the percentage of minority population that we generally say, and 20 to 25% is what we generally ask. Or some have been teacher aides, and if they've had teacher aides in a school that's cross-cultural and worked on a one-to-one basis or small group situations, they understand the problems. And so I'm willing to consider other schools. It's sad in some ways because some of the best experiences can be in some of the schools, new schools in Orange County, where you have younger teachers with, I think, better ideas. I think they're more innovative, more creative people. I'm afraid that, as we look even in this greater Los Angeles area, there have been teachers who have been at it for years, and they're not really anxious to learn anything new. Whereas in Orange County, I've had, I've been so successful with some of the fine people that are trying things. They're asking, how can I do it differently? And I like student teachers to be exposed to that kind of an individual. And so I have assigned, if they've had any kind of cross-cultural experience. It's not as critical if the student has worked. Like, for example, some of them worked in recreation, and they worked in the inner city, the central city of Long Beach. They've had, over a period of a year or two, they know a minority population and how to work with them. So I look for something either work experience or teacher aid experience. If they've had neither, they're going to have to do their student teaching in a school that is what we would really call cross-cultural.
As I hear you talk about this, it sounds so exciting. But as I think back about the people who were my history teachers in high school, and especially in junior high school, they really were the worst. I mean, do you really think you're making progress?
Let me put it this way. We still have, quote, some very poor teachers, but we've established a list of criteria for cooperating teachers, which we give to the school, to the department chair, to the assistant principal, or the one in charge of student teachers, saying, we're not going to do the selecting at this moment, but we will, in the back of our minds, evaluate as we get input. But who are your people the best, who are not going to take a student teacher because it means I can be in the teacher's lounge for an extra hour, but who are those that are really going to work with our student teachers? And it's work if you're going to do it, right. And we've been burned. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This goes back several years ago, but I had one master teacher whom I knew nothing about, but the department chair assigned the student teacher to this individual. And he just believed that students didn't like history, they wouldn't read it, so the way you will teach my class is the way I teach my class. And I had a young lady that was extremely bright, very creative, many ideas of what she wanted to do. She couldn't do it in that class. His idea was row one reads pages one and two, row two pages three and four, and we're not going to ask them to read all of it. So all it amounted to was, asking questions on it or answering questions, and it was very dull, killing. The redeeming feature for this girl was that I had another fortunate, a master teacher, who said, I want you to do what you want. I want to check it out with you. But, you're abreast of things. You're learning new things. I can probably learn something from you. I can help you in a lot of things, like classroom management. But I don't want you to mimic me or to be a reproduction of me. And I don't want an imitator. I want an innovator. And she had one. She was under the Fisher bill, where you had to teach only two classes. There she had her golden opportunity and did unique things. And most of the teachers, and I can't say all of them, most of them are willing to give freedom. The ones that give the freedom are essentially the younger teachers. And here I can find exceptions too, because this last semester I did have one little problem in a new school in the Irvine area where the teacher wasn't willing to let loose of that class. It's my class and I don't really want to let loose of it yet. But I've had problems in this respect, and perhaps this is a good way of looking at it. Many of our student teachers have as many as three cooperating teachers. three different people. Teaching is a very personal thing. What works for one person may not work for another individual. One person's highly successful in simulations, problem, approach, inquiry-based lessons. Another person, not good at it at all. So the student teacher is caught in a dilemma. He or she goes to these three teachers, and this teacher says, this is the way my class will be taught. I want you to do it the same way, because when you're through at the end of the semester, and this is especially true in the fall semester, because that teacher will typically take over that class for the spring semester. Now, if it's the spring semester, that teacher will not necessarily have those students in the fall if it's a year continuation like U.S. history. But if it's the fall, the teacher's got to take over in the spring, you'll teach it my way. All right? You go to this class with this teacher, then a second class and a third class. Each one has a different style of teaching, a different method of classroom management, and each student teacher is having to say, I got to adjust to each of them. That is a real problem. What I want to do is this. Give the student the typical three assignments, but if possible, there's a top teacher. Let that top teacher have that individual for two classes, and then there'll only be another person with whom that person could work. Remember, however, these students have to observe. They are to spend 1 hour a day observing other teachers, not only their own discipline, but you might pick up a style or method from a teacher in English, or foreign language, or science. So we are now going to crack down. We have not been as stringent as we should have, but we're making up a manual whereby they must get signatures now from teachers that they have observed these classes. Because simply by seeing these people in operation, they're going to pick up new ideas. But that's been a real problem, and the student teacher is the one that suffers, really. So when I mentioned a year ago or so when I had to remove a couple of student teachers, the removal was over the fact that there were conflicts between the master teachers. So the student teacher would try, say it was period one, and there were 5 minutes after class, and the cooperating teacher said, now, this is the way you should have done it. The student teacher goes the next period or a period thereafter, then tries to implement what that first period teacher said, and the other teacher says, no way, I don't want it that way, this is the way I want it. I removed these two people, and had to. It was demanded of me that I do it. The one I told her I would give her another opportunity in another school, because I thought she was bright, she was an older person, she was in her 40s. The fellow was a young fellow in his 20s, graduate of UC Santa Cruz, with quite a different curriculum and different education, but very bright. Some emotional problems. I sent him to another school, another semester, and got through. But they were willing, those teachers were willing to let him experiment. And the experimentation was excellent because he was a creative young man. In fact, he wouldn't have been in some of the classes at UCI where you don't get grades, you get evaluations. And the evaluations were the ones that impressed me of professors saying what he was capable of doing. Whereas I think the school in which I had him at first restricted him too much and boxed him in. Whereas the new school, I didn't say, you know, he's already been in one situation because I didn't want that to be a mark against him, but did say, if you can give this person flexibility, do it. Now, he did have a problem with some discipline, but that worked out. He didn't get the highest evaluations. Whether he gets a job, I don't know, but at least he had the opportunity.
Maybe we can take a little time to talk about what was going on the campus. You've talked on other tapes about what happened up to the time that Dr. Peterson left.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice a difference on the campus immediately, or?
Not necessarily immediately. I was, my relationship, perhaps I had just a little bit of background for a moment, my relationship with the presidents, if we include Don Simonson as an interim four presidents, has been very, very good. With Peterson, as I mentioned, there were problems to begin with, but He seemed to have respected me in spite of his disagreement with me. Then when McIntosh came, I was involved. See, he was here for, almost 10 years, I guess. And I got involved because I was in charge of the inauguration, the presidential inauguration, in which I had to preside over the inauguration. So I worked very carefully with Dr. McIntosh, who incidentally was rather cold in a way. By that I mean he wasn't a warm personality, but a man that I think trusted you if he had no reason not to think otherwise. So I worked very carefully with him on the inauguration.